The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Welcome to Mind Pump. This is how Doug would start the episode.
That's it. Nothing else.
Just welcome to Mind Pump.
No, that's what Doug literally said. He said, hey guys, why don't you start the show by just saying, welcome to Mind Pump. Why didn't we think of that?
You know what? That never even crossed my mind.
Well, I'm here with Sal DiStefano.
Hey.
And Justin Andrews.
That was very Kermit.
And I'm right there. Adam Schaefer. And we're about to, we're going to wrap up some Q&A?
Let's do a little more Q&As.
You know what? Hey, before we start, okay, kudos again. This is 2 weeks in a row that we're starting to get some, like, good questions that are not... Yeah. You know, I shouldn't say the fitness questions are good too, but you know, it's nice to get something different. You know, like I like to think that there's more to us. So yeah. I enjoy answering other random questions also. Mm-hmm. So love you guys for continuing that up. Love the support.
Keep it coming.
We love the Q&As because we love to answer your questions, and they're really easy to do. Actually, we can just go right through these.
Who's the first one we're going to take? Actually, we're taking the first one from Facebook or Twitter.
This one's from Instagram.
Oh, this is.
This is actually my brother. So I'm going to give him a little shout out. His Instagram tag is SuperStallion84.
Of course, sounds like your brother
from 84. So is he referencing Rocky or what?
No, that's when he was born.
Born probably.
Yeah. Well. Listen, it runs in the family.
All right,
SuperStallion.
Excuse me.
His question is: do we think supplements should be regulated by the FDA?
Well, I think
the short answer: no.
Yeah, because we don't think anything should be regulated.
No. But let's talk about what would happen.
Why?
Let's talk about that. What would happen if supplements were regulated by the FDA?
The same thing. Same thing you're going to see happens when the government starts to regulate marijuana.
Yeah.
It's going to get shitty.
Yeah. Everything. Yeah. You'll get less.
Lots of bureaucracy.
You'll get less for more.
Well, you know what I like to point out, because people are always like, "Well, things will be safer." Let me tell you what happens when you have a monopoly on regulation, because that's exactly what it is. When a government agency becomes the regulatory agency over a part of the market, it's a monopoly. Nothing else is regulating that market. So what happens is if the FDA screws up, which they do all the time, there's always recalls on food, there's always E. coli outbreaks, there's medicines, over-the-counter medicines that are tainted. They found lead in certain juices. I think Dr. Oz did a show on this, and then the FDA came back at him, and then he came back at them, and they found out that, in fact, some of these juices did have lead in them. What happens when the FDA screws up is nothing. Nothing happens to the FDA. They don't go away because they're a monopoly.
Who's the FDA watchdog?
Right. And not only that, but many times they ask for more money. We couldn't regulate that because we're underfunded. We need more money. And so you don't get competing agencies regulating things. Not only that, but the responsibility gets taken away from the product and put more on the FDA. Whereas in a market-regulated system like the way supplements are now, which they're largely unregulated, when a company comes out, this happened to a Muscle Tech supplement not that long ago. I think it was, what's their fat? Hydroxycut, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And there was an ingredient that was causing liver issues in some people. Their sales dropped dramatically, mm-hmm. which is what should happen.
Yeah, the market determines, you know, what their fate, basically.
That's right. And that's the way it should be, is if a product sucks, especially today with what they call near-perfect information, which was a problem that some economists would talk about in the past with market regulations, was, you know, that information didn't travel fast enough, so too many people would get screwed over. Well, nowadays with social media and the internet, I mean, something, you know, if a supplement...
Yeah, you make one slip, a lot of people are going to know about it really quickly.
Yeah, your company's fucked.
Yeah.
And then as a consumer, I hate to tell you this, consumers, but it's your responsibility
right.
to look into what you're putting into your face.
Well, I already see. I remember you had mentioned too, like on a couple of podcasts before, about you know, how the market, like how we need to influence the market in order to change and want healthier things. So I already see this. Like, I don't know if this is true or not, as far as like the profit losses of McDonald's.
Yes.
But I read that, and one thing that I did notice, like, so I saw an ad for them on Instagram, and it was. It was over, they were selling you chicken salad. And so the chicken salad was like, no preservatives. And, you know, we grow them fresh. And there's all these like marketing terms. Who the fuck is going to believe McDonald's now because of what they've already established and then trying to backpedal into this market? You know, the thing is, they should have thought of this a long time ago.
Well, I'll give you another example. Genetically modified organisms, otherwise known as GMOs. The American public for a long time now, almost since they were introduced in the market, has been in favor of labeling GMOs. We've said to the government many times when they do votes and whatnot, we want these things labeled. They are not labeling them. Why? Well, you know, when government plays a role in the game rather than just as a referee, they're the first person to get influenced.
Well, especially when they play a role in the fact that they've got their hands in some big things like wheat and corn and things that
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Now what you're seeing now is a lot of foods are getting labeled, you know, no non-GMO, and they're getting stamped with the GMO project. I think it's called the non-GMO project seal or whatever. This is a private regulatory agency that was created out of a market demand to label GMOs. This is not a government agency. This is a private label that's doing it. Now, the reason why I like this is because if they fuck up, no one's going to trust them anymore. And if that market response is still there, another company is going to step forward.
Right.
So you got to ask yourself this, because people say, well, you know, our food is regulated by the FDA. Do you think if the FDA disappeared tomorrow, let's just say it disappeared tomorrow, do you think there would be a market for people knowing that their food was clean and safe? Of course.
Oh, absolutely. People want to know that.
A business would start. That would be exactly that. That would test foods and let you know and label it or stamp it. Like,
that's right. You'd have competing agencies regulating things. You'd have different markets. You'd have more choices. For example, raw milk is illegal. You can't serve raw milk. And, you know, Adam can attest he used to milk cows when he was a kid.
He used to drink it right from the titty.
Right from the titty.
Not FDA approved.
Not FDA approved. Milk from healthy cows when it's raw is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Right? But they have laws against that, you know. And they've done raids on farms that are selling raw milk. There's videos of like SWAT teams going in and breaking. I swear to God, you can YouTube these.
Like smashing like milk cartons.
Oh, dude, like they're crack dealers. Yeah. No, I don't think supplements.
Get 'em, boys.
I don't think. And also, let's look at the numbers here. There is no epidemic of deaths or illnesses or problems coming from supplements. There is none. Supplements are remarkably safe, and you can compare them to almost anything else. They're incredibly safe. People aren't dying from them at nearly the rate that they are with over-the-counter drugs or other things that are regulated.
Yeah, you think that too, that it's because they're not so concentrated? So as far as like, you know, supplement companies go, you know, how much of that product are they actually wanting to give you, you know, if it's unregulated?
Well, I'll tell you something right now.
From a profit perspective.
I'll tell you something right now. You can buy some pre-workout supplements that have stimulants that'll fuck up a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And people they're taking the recommended dose, or they're taking a dose and saying, I don't like the way it makes me feel, and they stop taking it.
Yeah.
You know, well, people are remarkably responsible. I think that, you know, we get treated like kids so many times by these agencies, like we're little idiots. You know, if crack was available over the counter, I wouldn't go buy crack. Would you guys?
No.
Would you guys? Oh shit! I can buy crack now. I'm going to start smoking crack. I wouldn't buy crack.
It's raining crack.
Yes. Well, a lot of people don't know this with supplements. Like you just talked about, like in a free market situation where you know, just because it's not regulated by the government or what, it doesn't mean that companies won't come in and actually take precautions to make sure things are safe and smart. Like, so some companies, especially your big name supplement companies, will pay a pharmaceutical company to actually make sure you are getting the amount of like adjustments.
Right. Well, that's an advantage that they have. It's a big advantage, especially when they publicly show these records and these trials and studies.
In fact, and that's how it should be. It should be a competitive thing. It should be like, oh, look at, so, you know, this company and this company, they pay extra money. That's why their supplements cost more money. Hint, by the way, just there's a red flag for you right away. If typically protein powder, a multivitamin has, okay, your typical protein powder that has 50 servings in it is going to be, you know, roughly, you know, $45 to $75. If you find it somewhere for 20 bucks, you know, chances are it's not all protein in there. You know, there's a good chance, and it's at some, you know, you find it at like a Rite Aid or a Walmart.
It's like
or
sawdust.
Yeah, you know, and it's some off brand and you're just trying to save money. Well, yeah, you might save some money, but you might not get hardly any of your product you want. Now, flip that on to a reputable brand that's a big name, big company, multi-million dollar company that pays for a pharmaceutical company to regulate what's in there. Then you could pretty much almost guarantee what says on the back of the label is what you're getting in the back of the
label. In fact, many of these companies will provide you with third-party testing for their supplements. You simply call them or ask for it. Hey, I'd like to see how many grams of creatine there is per serving, and they'll send you copies of these third-party tests that they'll actually run on their own brands. These companies have, and here's the thing: people think unregulated by the FDA means unregulated. That's not true. It just means it's not regulated by a government agency. But they're still regulated. These companies, you know, many of these companies, they have a vested interest in making good products. Now, are there shiesty ones out there? Well, yeah, fuck yeah, there are. There's some shiesty ones out there. But again, it's your responsibility, consumer. You buy what works and what doesn't work and what's crap, you know, learn about it and don't get it anymore. And that's usually what happens. Shitty products disappear and good ones stick around. So do we think supplements should be regulated by the FDA? No.
Nope.
Not at all. All right, next question. This is from Tess_Christie. And this is a good one. We might need to give Adam a time limit here because I think he's going to want to talk.
Okay, what's this one?
Yeah, so what are each of our biggest personal business or fitness accomplishments? So what are some of our biggest accomplishments? Who wants to go first here? Don't be saving yourself for last, bro, so you can go forever.
You're such a jerk, bro. Why are you always picking on me right now? I just recently learned how to read, so that's probably one of my top.
Oh, man.
Shut up.
Do you want me to go first or what?
Good job.
Why don't you go into one of these here. Personal, business, or fitness.
Maybe we go around robin some things that were like that. So
yeah.
Personal, for sure, the very first thing that hops out, the most proud moment of my life was the day I bought my house. I remember being a young kid, being 21 years old, standing in my house and just like being empty as shit and just like going like, I did it, you know, I did it. And I did it young. I did it before any of my friends. I did it before anyone knew it. And I did it in the Bay Area, which is not like, you know, it's not like buying some house.
It's a hard market.
Yeah. It's it wasn't cheap. It wasn't easy. You know, I'd worked my ass off. I'd saved. I'd great credit for a young kid. So that was probably my proudest moment, you know, or accomplishment, whatever, as far as personal goes. As far as fitness goes, definitely the first thing that comes to mind was actually the most recent. Going pro was pretty cool. It made me feel like a little kid again. I remember battling it out on stage between Devin Linder, him and I going back and forth, and we took first and second place. And walking off stage and like giving him this huge hug and just being so overwhelmed with like excitement, it was just so unreal. The whole being at USA's too. So going pro there, I couldn't ask for a better place, you know. So and not to take that away from anybody that's gone pro at other places, but you know, USA's is by far, you know, probably one of the most prestigious shows that you could go to, and to get my pro card there was a huge accomplishment. You know, it was awesome, and I remember a lot of people. Before that, which, you know, we talked in another episode about what drives us, self-motivates us. A lot of people told me I shouldn't do that because they're like, oh, that's like the hardest show to win and this and that. I'm like, fuck that. That's why I want to win. Mm-hmm. That's why I want to go to that one. I don't want the easiest show. I don't want a show that a handful of guys show up to. Like, I want where the best of the best all over the United States shows up and then I take it. So that was – and then even the whole scene afterwards, we went to a huge pool party at Wet Republic afterwards and it was completely packed house. And of course, I was shredded to the bone. So I'd get celebrating. It was such a surreal moment for me. You know, it was definitely one of the most awesome. And then, as far as fitness business, like in God, I would have to say the year I broke the fitness manager personal sales record. So in personal training, so I was a fitness manager, and at that time. The record was like $24,000 something in personal training sold a month. And it was pretty crazy because I...
And this is personal sales.
Yeah, personal sales. Yeah. Personal sales as a fitness manager, not as a personal trainer. Obviously, the personal trainer one is obviously higher. You're training a lot more clients. As a fitness manager, you only have a handful of clients that you can technically train. So basically, I had to do that off of new business. So anybody that understands the business, that means I sold $25,000 worth of personal training to people I really didn't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, a handful of those people I did know and re-signed and, you know, a few thousand dollars. But for the most part, these were new business. And the way it went down was I was a few thousand dollars. I want to say I was about $3,000 away from the record on a day before the last day. So it was not looking good. I mean, I had to find, and of course I'd already re-signed clients that already utilized that early on in the month. So it's not like I had somebody I could call up and say, hey, it's time to re-sign or whatever like that. And in walks a fit. A fit means a first time client coming in. So somebody's going to try the gym out and wants to, you know, get a body fat tested, measurements, and, you know, looking to utilize the gym. And I took this lady on like a 2-hour tour because it was like my last hope. It was like the last person. And it was crazy because I was just, I mean, this is, and this goes to the power of like self-motivation and like believing in that you're going to do this, right? Like I believed I was going to break this record and I was going to do whatever it took to get there. And I was not going to let this lady walk out with not buying any personal training. And not only is she not buying personal training, she actually, the end of my presentation, I had presented her for a year's worth of personal training. And she pulled out her home equity line and put $5,000 on personal training on the second to last day. And I broke the record. And that was pretty cool. Of course, the president and everybody called me from upper management, stuff like that, to congratulate me and made a big deal. And that was pretty cool.
So, awesome.
That's cool, man.
Your turn, Justin.
Oh, you want to go last time?
Sandbagging. Oh, he is sandbagging. He's fucking sandbagging. Those were all off the cuff right there, right?
That's fine. I know you have more. I'm probably going to just say a few.
Oh, that, right.
You know what I mean? Sal's going to sandbag it. It's okay.
fucking sandbagger.
Sandbagger. Hashtag. as far as personal goes, I'm very proud of the fact that I graduated college. A lot of people I know didn't do it.
That's a dig at us.
Boom.
Yeah, that was a
boom. It was hard. It was not like, you know, you can talk all the shit you want about not going to college and it being useless or whatever, dude. It was a hard, you know, academic endeavor. And so anyway, I'm proud of that. And then the other fact to that is that
where'd
I played...
Where'd you go to school again,
by the way? Trinity National, awesome. Yeah. And I started at San Jose State and then transferred and, you know, stuck with it. I played football there. That was the other thing that I'm proud of doing. I took my career all the way from high school into college. And so I played at a real competitive level. And had I wanted to really, you know, invest all of my time into that, I may have been able to keep doing something with it. But I just wanted to move on, and so me coming back here to California was kind of led into me meeting my wife, and then, you know, having my kids, which I'm, you know, are big, you know, personal accomplishments. I guess is that accomplishment?
Sure,
I did it.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Sure is, bro. No, but I mean that's one of my proudest moments.
They're good looking kids too.
Yeah. So anyway, that's definitely high on my. On my personal. And then as far as business goes, I started out, you know, with them too at 24. And so I went through and really, I figured out how to be a good trainer and how to start selling. And so my evolution of that, I'm proud of, and I actually won some awards with that as well. So I got to the point where, I was number one in the company, I believe twice. And, that's as far as sales goes. And you know, it was really, for me, it was all about the high retention rate. So I had clients forever and forever. Like I just, like people just wanted to keep working with me. And it wasn't that I was, we were never reaching our set goals or anything. It's just, it gets to that point, you know, it's like, this is part of my routine, and I like, you know, I like training with you, and I like doing that. So I feel good about that. That's an accomplishment for me, which I carried on into my what do you call it when you go independent. So I moved on from there and went independent, and it was a whole new ball game. This is a whole new experience where now everything's revolving on you for marketing. Everything's revolving on you for drumming up business, keeping business, making people happy. So I was thankful that I had a good clientele base that I brought with me, but then I was able to slowly start attracting new clients. I learned a lot about websites and how to market myself properly with that. And then I sold like my first huge deal on my own. And then from then on, I realized, okay, this is what I can do. I can go with these high preset rates and I can make a good living off of this without having to work so hard. And so that kind of shifted everything for me as far as accomplishments go. So that's kind of where I'm at today, to where I have things that I'm going to be really, really proud of that are going to happen. Still working on them. So continued.
What about when you bought your house?
So that will count. Definitely. Yeah. We bought our house, and that was a huge thing for me because I slaved for that.
I remember several times. Standing around walking in my house. This feels so
it happened.
I did it. Finally.
You're right. You're right. That was a big, big moment for me. I'm definitely proud of that. So.
Awesome. All right, my turn.
Go ahead, sandbagger. Don't worry, you guys don't know this, but I'm going to come over
50,000 in sales.
Time. I saved better every ones. Day.
All right, I'll start with personal business and fitness. Well, business. When I first became a general manager, when I ran my first club, I was 19. So I was at the time when I did this. This was before you guys were there. I believe I was there. I was there before you guys were, right? At the time, managers were like in their 30s. Nobody was, in their 20s, let alone 19 years old. And I had to convince them. At the time, I was the top producer. I was breaking records left and right. And matter of fact, some of those records stayed years even after I left the company. But the first club they gave me was Salinas. I got the club way down. I had to drive an hour all the way down to Salinas. It was a small little club. It was always in the red.
Anybody that knows it's a shithole, not a place you'd want to work. It's not ideal.
It wasn't the best club, and that's why they took a risk. They said, we're going to give it to this 19-year-old kid and see what happens. And when I got there, the club was hitting about $50,000, $60,000 a month, and we were hitting $100 to $120 out of there. And from there, they gave me the flagship club of the Bay Area, which was Sunnyvale. And I ran that, and I was only 20 when I did that. So that was a big deal for me. Buying my first gym at, I think I was 21 when I went down to Palm Desert and I bought a share of a health club with my business partner as a youngster. And you learn a lot doing that. It's kind of scary, but then again, you're young and you really don't care. So that was an absolute blast. I bought my house after that and then started my personal training business. But buying or starting your first business, you'll never forget, because that's when you're the greenest. That's when you're the newest.
Right.
You've got people working for you. You're young and hungry. I mean, I didn't sleep. You guys think I'm crazy now. I was crazy. I was insane back then. It was like I never ran out of energy. It was crazy. And then fitness. I think for me, the first time I ever was able to deadlift 600 pounds. That for me is a big deal. That was a big deal for me as a natural lifter, being able to pull 600 pounds off the floor. I weighed about 220, and my goal now is to hit that same number. But to weigh 200 pounds. I want to do a 3-time body weight deadlift. And I guess that's pretty much it. You thought I was sandbagging. That's it. Oh. I'm short. Short and sweet, baby.
No, that was
short. Cool. And I'm just going to go ahead and make your move, Adam.
No. I don't want to steal your thunder, bro. I thought that was good.
That was good.
Yeah, that was good.
I was expecting like this laundry list.
I do want to say something more about Justin. It has nothing to do with me, because Sal and I can talk about ourselves all day long. It's just, it comes very natural. Justin, it is way out of character for him to talk about himself. So.
He's definitely the most humble.
It is. Yes. He is, and I like to think we all are. Although Sal and I totally don't come off that way. but we, really, I believe Sal is, and I am too. Yeah. So
are good-hearted dudes.
But Justin just gets completely awkward when you start asking him questions about himself, which it cracks me up.
This
because
is true.
So maybe from now on, when someone asks questions like that, I'll start answering for him. So because this guy, one of the things that why he even is in this room right now and why I have so much respect for the man is because he was a trainer. I hired him, so he was a trainer for me years ago. And one of the neatest things to see, he was a very unique trainer, because he was typically trainers that are very successful and break records and do things are like Sal or I. They have a big mouthpiece. They like to talk. They like to be that way. They're kind of loud and flashy and outgoing personality. And Justin wasn't like that. He was more to himself, very professional, very business. And, you know, like he mentioned about sales, like that wasn't like natural for him. I mean, Sal has a story he told about the first day on the job. He like broke like a sales record. I had the exact, like literally the second day of work for me, my buddy comes over to me and he tells me, hey, you want to take this fit tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.? Totally pawns off this 19-year-old girl on me at like freaking at 6 in the morning. I don't care. I'm new. I'm like, yeah, I'll take it. And I take it and I close her on 36 sessions. It was like a $2,000 deal. And he gets the next morning, gets there, and he looks on the next morning. He's like, what the fuck, dude?
Oh, yeah.
Who bought all this?
Oh, you
training?
Gave it to me. What'd you think was going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And I thought, you know, no big deal. I didn't think it was a big deal. Like, I was like, I did what I was supposed to do, you know? And so, you know, it came very natural for me. And Justin, it wasn't like that. It was something that he had to work at, you know, going back to that self-motivating. And it was such a cool thing to see. And he became somebody, not only was he my right hand, so he ended up being the assistant manager of the facility that we ran. But on top of that, he was the most consistent trainer I probably ever had work for me. I mean, month in, month out, I could always count on, you know, X amount of revenue, and he was completely solid. And like I said, he was never flashy about it. It was all business for him, and he was super professional and consistent. And you watched him work at his sales for something that he would tell you is uncomfortable. Just like this guy is with this whole microphone thing. I mean, when we first started doing this, he had no desire to do this. And as we continue to go on these episodes, the guy just keeps, you know, now
he's singing in the beginning of all.
Yeah, bro, he's starting to steal my thunder and shit. I thought, you know, so, you know, I just wanted to make people knew, like, what a badass that he was. He wasn't just this average trainer.
Thank you, dude.
Yeah, because I know you have a hard time over there talking about
him. I'm, like, getting uncomfortable as you're talking about
me. I know, yes, his voice blushy.
He's turning, like, tender chins.
He's so funny, dude. So it's great. So, you know, he is a badass. I like, you know, this table is full of badasses for sure. And Sal and I have no problem telling you guys that. But,
Justin's all good because you guys rub off on me. So yeah, that's so really what's happening here.
He is the conservative one or the humble one out of the three of
I'll
us.
I'll rub off on you. How are we doing on time, Douglas? Is it?
Go for one more.
We got one more? Let's do it. This is from, this question is from, this gentleman's asked us a couple questions. Pedro. We always say his name that way.
I like it that way.
Pedro's wondering, how do we deal with buddies? Oh, I'm going to paraphrase, but basically, how do you deal with your buddies that like to party? Like, what do you do in your spare time except for workout? You know, it sounds like he wants to have a life and not just be. I'm going to say this. Look, if you want to be shredded, you want to have a six pack, you want to really stand out, then you got to do what a lot of people are not willing to do.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't happen by accident.
Yep.
No. You have to be different for sure. You're when you're walking around single digit body fat, you're 1% of the 1%ers, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know,
that's why everybody looks at people who look like that and says, oh my God, that looks amazing. Because it's rare. And the reason why it's rare is because it means you're not going out with your buddies and doing all that shit. So it's kind of like you gotta ask yourself what's more important. And I'm not, you know, saying, hey, if you like to party or you like to hang out with your buddies, you're an idiot. I'm just saying, you know, if that's what you want to do, then you can't expect to look a certain way. It just doesn't work both ways. It's very difficult.
And I think
hang out with them during the day, go play golf, go do active things. This is what I've had to learn. Okay. So, you know, I have a lot of friends that like to party and stuff too. And you just have to like start organizing events that aren't party related. I mean, they'll bring the party there. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. They'll be the party, but you know, just so everybody sort of interacts in a different level.
Well, I'll tell you, for all of my entire fitness career, so from 20 years old up until 30, I pretty much maintained between 10 and 14% body fat, which is pretty good. Pretty fit.
Not bad.
Yeah. If you looked at me in a t-shirt and I'm walking around the gym, I looked fit. I look like a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. I looked the part. Was I shredded? Hell no. Was I ready? Hell no. You know, was I the guy at the pool when I got my shirt off, everyone was breaking necks when I was walking around and people were like, oh my God, what do you do? You know, no, not at all. I was fit, you know, and I had balance. I went out and drank every once in a while with my buddies and I ate out a lot here and there, like, you know, but I still worked out hard and I still also dieted and it was a little bit of both back and forth. And that's kind of what kept me in that range. It wasn't until I made this whole new dedication to, okay, I've got to compete, so I got to take this to a whole nother level. And so my mentality completely changed. I don't do any of that shit. And quite frankly, I don't miss any of it. You know, it, to me, I enjoy the feeling of being that lean and that fit. To me, I've fallen in love with that. You know, and that's part of, people ask me about my whole experience with competing, and the part that I've fallen in love with competing is what it's done for me discipline wise for eating and working out, more so than like the actual, like getting up on stage. I'm not a big fan. I suck at posing. It's not my thing to go look there like a pretty model. Like that's not my thing. But I do love the preparation of getting ready for the stage. I love yesterday. So I did this to myself because I just came off the mini bulk, and I was like, and I think I shared this on one of the last podcasts that, you know, I let myself drink on a weekend, and I went up. Okay, this is crazy. Two weekends, I allowed myself to kind of go off the rails a little bit for a couple days. And I mean, I'm still working out. I'm still dieting all the rest of the days. My ass went up 3% body fat. Yeah, I went from 6% to fucking 9% body fat.
I was a freak out.
Tank. He was so pissed.
Yeah.
He was so mad.
I was fucking furious. And the worst part about it was, not only did I go up that, so I went up 7 pounds. Out of the 7 pounds, 6.8 of it was fat. So I got 0.2 muscle out of all that crap. I was still training my ass off. So, now mind you, a couple things. One, obviously, the leaner you are, the more susceptible to swings you're going to be like that, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, when you're that lean, it doesn't take much to jump up a couple percent. You know, had I been 15%, that wouldn't have jumped.
You would have gone up 1%. Maybe.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, take that into consideration. But what I do love about it is, so that's all I had to do, and it just switched my mentality.
Well, right. I'm glad you admitted this, because I actually noticed one or two people like, oh, Adam made me do it, and they're like hashtagging, you know, eating an In-N-Out and like crushing all this like nonsense. Well, you know, the real skinny on that is that it didn't.
No, yeah, exactly. Adam didn't enjoy it, and it didn't just like go and like create more abs. I fucking put on 6.8 pounds of fat.
It's got to be a clean bulk.
Well, this applies to people who are successful in business too, because you'll see people looking at like, you know, millionaires and this and that and being like,
yes,
oh, look at that guy. He said, yes. Like, you don't know what that fucking dude does. You know, when you're not looking at him, you know, with the nice car, you know, out to dinner, spending money, that dude's busting his ass, you know, for 16 hours a day. And he probably didn't make shit for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
This is the conversation.
Absolutely.
This is a conversation I have with my girl almost daily. Like, so, you know, we talk about this all the time because she gives me I get a lot of grief for how much I work. And, you know, and my defense always is, I look, and I've told her since day one, we've been together for 4 years, and I go, listen, You know, when you met me, who I was.
Exactly.
And I told you that my ambitions and my goals, they have not changed. I'm still that same guy, that the things that I want, where I want to be, and I know what it takes to be that way. You will never meet a millionaire.
I must have this conversation with my wife on a monthly basis.
Yes.
And I've been with her forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, you guys...
Sounds like we all have the same cycle.
The guy who wrote the 4-hour work week, that's a joke.
Yeah. Well, you know Rocky, remember the movie Rocky? When
that
Rocky's
is a
like,
joke.
There's like that scene in Rocky, and I think it's the one where he's going to fight the Russian, which is one of the best ones, by the way. And he's at the bottom of the stairs, and Adrian's like, why are you going to fight him? You can't win. And he's like, well, maybe I can. He's like, I'm a warrior, Adrian. Like, that's who I am. That's all I can do.
It's just who you are. It's like, it gives me chills.
Fucking pumped right now. You know, if you want to be that 1%, then you got to do what 99% of the people won't do. And that means busting your ass. That means, you know, maybe people think you're crazy, whatever. Embrace it. I fucking love being crazy. I love being weird. You know, you think I'm not balanced, fine. You're just jealous because you can't do it yourself. I mean,
the other thing is this is, so I noticed as I got older, and this became more important to me to be fitter and fitter as I got and I don't know how old this kid is, whoever's out or guy, I don't know how old he is, but you know, all of a sudden you get to a point where, it becomes more work. You know, it's more work. Oh, yeah. You have to be more disciplined, more organized, because you start to have a family, you start to have kids, you start to have a job, jobs and things, and your metabolism starts to change. All these things start to happen. So you think it's challenging now because friends and passing at parties, like, shit, that ain't even hard.
I feel like I need to like do a whole episode on that with my journey.
Right. So,
dude,
I, and so, now what you'll find, so I still have my really good friends. So I've got buddies that I love to death. My two best childhood best friends that to me, I think of them like family. I mean, they're my two childhood best friends, Jared and Justin, go all the way back to when I was fucking 4 years old. Those guys are not hardcore fitness guys. They totally support what I do and are supportive when I come over and visit and everything like that. So they don't give me grief about eating out of Tupperware and so that. But those, they drink and they enjoy themselves and they eat out, and Adam carries his Tupperware. It's not a big deal. You know, but I don't see them on a regular basis, you know, and part of that is, you know, we live a little ways apart and we have separate lives, but in this, even if they live close by, I would find myself surrounding myself around people on a daily basis that are like-minded as far as what they're trying to do. It just is, it helps having a support group around there. So if you got friends that all they want to do is party and go out and drink and do stuff like that, like at one point, you know, if you really, really care about it, you kind of stop hanging out with them as much because you care more about other stuff. But now, if you care more about your boys and hanging out and partying and do those things, well, that to each their own. You know what I'm saying? I'm not here to tell you what you should or shouldn't do.
Yeah.
But I made the transition at one point that this became more important to me. And that is something that I want for myself. And those that love you and that care about you, they're going to be supportive. They're going to be okay with you making those changes or maybe passing. I mean, my good buddies, sometimes they understand. I tell them like, hey, I can't go, you know, like, hey, we want to go to Vegas this weekend and party. I'm like, dude, I'm 2 weeks out from a show.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Do you know what my nickname is with with all my buddies, my cousins? And these are the guys that if I do party, I'm going to party with. They call me Santa Claus.
Santa Claus.
Because I only come out once a year. they know Sal's gonna come out. Santa Claus is coming out, you know, it's that once a year time he's gonna go hang out with us and go nuts. And you know, like, listen, I can party with the best of them, but I just don't do it a lot. So if you want to look a certain way, you want to achieve a certain level of success, you got to be willing to do what most people are not willing to do.
I love the fact that you brought that to business too, because it's the same mentality.
Yep.
It's very much so the mentality, which I think that's what makes the three guys at this table successful, is that we all have that switch.
Let's not forget Doug. This dude.
Yeah, I know.
Well, he's not technically at this table.
When we're done recording these shows.
In this room, the four guys.
Yeah, when we're done recording the shows, this dude's back at home putting them together.
Well, he's putting in a serious
He has
work,
the grinder man. Switch, too. That's what keeps us all together, for sure. You got to have that.
He's the glue.
The Doug.
He's Doug.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.